up next on NHL Fantasy on Ice. The fellas set you up for the week ahead. Waiver wire ads, goalie advice, and storylines galore. The stretch run is here, and only the thoroughbreds will prevail. Ring it.
How's it going, everybody? Monday morning, Jensen and Reese, Fantasy on Ice. Really excited to bring you this, I guess we could call it a playoff preview type thing, right? The fantasy playoffs are already here in some leagues, Rob.
Exactly, Pete. It's a great time of year. If you made the playoffs, if you didn't, you know, better luck next year. But for those that did or have a final push this week, Pete, I think we should kick it off with some fan questions. So why don't we start with a huge one? We know that Kailer Yamamoto looks like he's coming back very, very soon from a lower body injury. He's been one of the best players for the Oilers and in fantasy hockey since January 1st. So if you're looking to activate Yamamoto, what kind of player are you dropping?
Well, first of all, Yamamoto has made a night and day difference with that team. You always think about the Oilers, right, and being driven largely by McDavid and Draisaitl. Mm-hmm. Draisaitl already a 100-plus point player this year. Yamamoto has made taking them to a different level this year when he's healthy. So I guess regardless, across the board, you got to get this player in your lineup. If he's out there on the waiver wire, he's, what, 21 points
right,
in 21
right.
games? So really has made a stellar difference for this team. I think that if you're trying to drop somebody to pick this guy up, make sure he doesn't cover those key categories like hits.
Okay.
If you're in a hits league, right, don't drop like a Vincent Trocheck or an Anders Lee for a player like that. Try to find somebody else. Drop your fourth goalie or drop your a skater that maybe doesn't cover the peripherals.
I agree with that logic for sure. The hits category, Pete, is such an easy one to win if you have three or four players that hit.
Right.
And that's one of the safest options to keep advancing in the playoffs. I know that this is kind of obscure, but Yamamoto is a points-only guy. He really is. So, like, you really do have to look at your categories, see where your players rank, and then decide from there. Now, one quick stat here. With Kailer Yamamoto in the lineup, they're 13-5-3 with a 6.90. That's almost a 70% winning percentage, scoring over three goals a game. And without Yamamoto, their winning percentage is just above 500, and they're scoring less than three goals a game, 2.77.
They're scoring more than a goal per game more. With him in the lineup. So, he has been their most valuable secondary scorer, and that's on a team that had gotten big contributions from, like, R&H at different points, right? Like, especially since the trade deadline. Cassian, before his suspension, was really producing well.
Well, you just brought up Cassian. He's a wonderful ad. And he played 18 minutes in his first game back from suspension, and he had a couple hits in that one. Now, didn't have a point, Pete, but mm-hmm. I think that's a player that's very, very safe to pick up for your fantasy playoffs. And his ownership is down to 15% now. I just checked beforehand.
Wow.
So everybody cut the cord there with Cassian. I think that's a slam dunk player to pick up for both a couple points and a lot of hits.
One guy that we haven't talked about very much, but he has played the first, three games of his Oilers tenure with McDavid is Tyler Ennis.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a guy that you're looking at all on the waiver wire? You'd rather pick up
not
Cassian even if he's not playing with McDavid?
Yeah, if I was to rank them, I'd say Yamamoto 1, Cassian 2, Athanasiu 3, and then Ennis, 4. I mean, if you're in a super deep league, I like it, but otherwise I wouldn't go near it. And I looked at his ice time, and it's coming down. So I think as the other players get healthy, Ennis is going to get less and less valuable. Now, great addition for the team in general, come playoff time for them, for sure. But fantasy-wise, I would put him on the back burner.
And Athanasiu, we were hyped up about as well, and he was banged up last week, but then he came back. So it looks like the Oilers, once they get Yamamoto back, will have a full top nine forward group to work with, and they can really get back to that one strong line and then see what works well with McDavid. They had a big win over the weekend against the Winnipeg Jets. Those are those measuring stick type games that you need to win.
Very gutsy performance there. Now, Ziggy Bombadil asks us on Twitter, I have Fleury, Jari, Murray, all struggling heading into the playoffs. Should I drop either Kovalchuk or Charlie Coyle to pick up Stalock?
I would drop Coyle. I mean, I know what Coyle's playing with DeBrusk right now because they do Kasha with Krejci and then DeBrusk with Coyle, but I'm not seeing much fantasy value in Charlie Coyle. How about the Minnesota Wild? I know they lost on Sunday, but they've had some big performances. The one that comes to mind is when they walked into Columbus and won 5-0, and they're right there in the right there ahead of the Blackhawks, I think, last I checked. So that is a team that has some fantasy appeal, even if it's like against the grain, deep league. Like Fiala's been one of the most valuable players, 4 straight multi-point games, and then Stalock has won some games recently as well. I mean, you don't really look at that team with a ton of fantasy confidence, but where they are in the standings, they have no pressure on them because they kind of sold at the deadline. So kind of tip your cap to that team and just ride Stalock as a streaming option, I think.
I think it's funny because I as much as, you know, they have been playing well, I mean, they're a playoff team since January 15th, if you look at it that way. But for whatever reason, I just never buy in on this team. I do have Fiala in a couple leagues, which is great.
That's
but
good.
Otherwise, like, it's just I don't trust the team. I really don't. Like, I know that they're in the playoff hunt, but for whatever reason, like time and time again, I always fade the Wild. So for me, I would not pick up Stalock. I really think if you have Fleury, Jari, and Murray, I mean, I would try and drop Charlie Coyle for another forward. I would try and drop him for a Yamamoto or for a Cassian. I'd look to get a little bit more category coverage at the forward position because I think the Pens, I mean, this happens in the Metro every single year for the past 5 to 10 years. Like, there's a fight for second and third. There's never really a fight for first. It works. It always works out that way. So I think with the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think they should finish second in the division and get that home ice. They have 14 remaining games against Metro opponents in their final 16, which is crazy. So I think they're positioned nicely to kind of bounce back. I know they went on a kind of tough Cali road trip, but as we know, Pete, that's not an easy road trip, no matter if the teams are good or not. So
no, and I think on Saturday night, when did the Penguins play the Sharks? I mean, that's a perfect example of a team that's out of it, having zero pressure, zero to play for, but some pride on the line. And you have to look at that around the league, especially for wagering purposes. There are going to be a lot of spoiler teams. We saw it also on Saturday when the Blackhawks beat the Florida Panthers. The Florida Panthers had everything to play for, an absolutely dominant overtime. They couldn't score. And then, you know, Taves and Kane finished them off. I mean, some of these teams have a lot of offense, and they can and will play spoiler any given night.
Yeah. So I guess to reiterate, I'd probably ride that tandem. I would feel good if I had Fleury in the Pens tandem right now, like for the final 2 or 3 weeks. I wouldn't really be worried about my goalies.
Right.
Like, on the other hand, if you have a guy like Demko or Gorgiev or, you know, kind of in that second tier, Pete, that's when I would start to worry and maybe look to pick up a Stalock just to say, hey, you know, they might finish better than the Demkos, than the Gorgievs, especially with Shesterkin possibly returning in the next week or two, and then Demko probably 2 or 3 weeks out.
Sure. If you have the Penguins tandem, if you have even Arizona's tandem, I would hang tough with them. I mean, once you start getting the Ranger one is interesting because clearly if you have Shesterkin and Georgiev, stand pat.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get any further down the list in the tandems, that's where you have to kind of abort the plan and just fend for yourself on the waiver wire and try to pick a. I mean, like Vancouver right now, that was a big, I mean, whether you call it a choke job or whatever happened, like they blew a 3-1 lead with 8 minutes to go against Columbus, and Columbus is without probably their 4 best players right now. So they need to go back to the drawing board, and that's not a team that without Jacob Markstrom you can fully trust, unfortunately. They had Deming in net on Sunday. Demko had a couple of losses this past week. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You were high on this team all along. Do you think they can survive Markstrom's absence for another 3 weeks, let's say?
Well, a couple episodes ago, I said, look, this is a real problem for them, the Markstrom injury, because they have played a lot of those games, like the Columbus game this weekend, where they really should, they deserve to lose. But then Markstrom will come up with a huge stop in either late in the second or early in the third period that kind of keeps momentum in their sphere. So without him, like, you're not going to get that save from Demko, unfortunately. He's a young netminder. We're seeing this time and time again. Netminders are taking a lot longer to develop now. I don't think it's a shot to Demko. It's not. Like, I think he'll be all right for them. But Markstrom's clearly the guy there, and without him, they are going to struggle, I think, to keep a wild card spot.
For sure. They should still get in. I do believe that. But it might get a little dicey here down the stretch for Vancouver. Markstrom isn't the only big injury here. There have been a number of huge forward injuries over the past 3 or 4 days, ranging from Steven Stamkos to Mark Stone. Patrick Laine's more on the day-to-day side, but he missed their game over the weekend. And even someone in deeper leagues like Burakovsky, in and out of the lineup every single day. So Let's start with Stamkos. I mean, Andre Palat, I think, is the obvious ad here. I picked him up in one league last night.
And he hits, which is awesome. Like, that's another player, great position, left wing, hits, checks that box, also gets some goals, some shots, pretty consistently. Like, he's a player you really could have hung on to all year and made a case for that. Like, any given week, he's going to have a good game. So, always, 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 Tampa has a favorable playoff schedule, which gives Palat our stamp of approval.
Yeah, second most favorable schedule based on strength of schedule. Update from the NHL stats crew. It's available on NHL.com/fantasy. Go and check it out and use that to break your ties. Look at the home road splits. Look at the games remaining and look at the opponent points percentage.
Absolutely. And we saw Sergachev had a huge weekend for them too. On an underrated little, like, whether you can call it a second power play unit or first, depending on the day, whatever Coach Cooper's feeling. But nice to see that the secondary guys are coming on, are activating in lieu of Stamkos being out. So good story line to keep an eye on. Again, and if you're looking for a deeper guy than even Palat, Pete, I wouldn't hesitate to add one of those like secondary or even like third tier guys for Tampa just because of the schedule alone.
What do you think about Yanni Gourde? I know somebody was thinking about picking that guy up. I mean, at the surface, he hasn't really been in our top 200 rankings this week, but based on the case you just made, you want to tap into that team even without Stamkos, even with their flaws and things that go wrong on a given night. I mean, it's a very safe team.
I think there's two types of people at this time of year. The type of person that feels comfortable playing the schedule, and then the type of person that cherry picks players on bad teams that are going to play a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a Yanni Gourde maybe versus like an Alex Alafolo or someone like on that level, like on a bad team. I tend to side a little bit more with the high upside guy on a bad team because it's all about ice time for me. Yanni Gourde, though, I mean, he's proven that he can play. And he can play north of 15 minutes if needed and chip in some goals and assists. So I like that play. I would side with you if you were the type one person there. I'm a little bit more trying to hit on the high upside and win the league that way, but it does come with a lot higher risk too, especially in plus minus.
So you are the defenseman expert over here. So good fan question from Mark. Who would you start this week, Sam Girard or Rasmus Dahlin? I think that fits the same bill as what you were talking about. Dahlin, higher-end player for a much worse team, and Girard is on James's top 10 waiver wire list this week after a big week.
Well, Girard's a little streaky, so he's going to have those big games, and then he'll drop off. I mean, we saw Eric Johnson have a nice couple points over the weekend, too. Yeah. So that's what concerns me about the Avs on the Sabres end. We know Olofsson's a little banged up. They did not give an update on him. That's another potential big-time fantasy injury. So keep an eye on that. We'll obviously get the news when we have it, but haven't heard yet. So I would still side Dahlin. I just don't think you can part ways with that super, super elite skill. I know Girard's on a much better team night and day than the Sabres, but still, I'm always going to take the better player, which would be Dahlin.
Okay. And what do you make of the Carolina Hurricanes' struggles? Because we got a couple questions about Vincent Trocheck, people trying to pull the plug already. That kind of files into the thing where, with hits and stuff, like, be a little more patient. Sometimes these things, after a trade, they don't materialize right before your eyes. It might take 3 to 5 games, but is it worth that wait? Like, is it worth sacrificing 3 to 5 games just to get maybe a couple of big games out of Trocheck?
I think you should. If there's another intriguing player available, I'd be very tempted to cut the cord with Trocheck. I mean, look, we were big fans of the trade for sure. I think that's more of like a general hockey thing than fantasy. Yeah. When you look at the wings on Carolina, I mean, you're looking at guys like Martin Nečas and Nino Niederreiter, who he's been playing with, and like that's just not going to get it done. He's going to need surefire wings. And even if he bumped up to the second line, it'd be Warren Fogel, who I have no interest in, and Justin Williams. I mean, like, there's absolutely no appeal. So sometimes these wings at the deadline will have a much bigger impact. Like Athanasiou, for example, I'd be willing to be patient on him. But a center's got too much responsibility out there, especially with wings that are unproven. So I would look at other guys and say, yeah, I'd be willing to cut the cord on Vinny.
And look at Vinny, his role right now. He's not only getting adjusted to a new team, he has the high center face-off load. The team has both of its goalies injured, so they need his help on defense. Like, and the team's struggling right now. Carolina can't win a game, it seems. So it's like that's his primary responsibility, is to have the back end covered, and maybe the offense, at least in the short term, is not on the top of the to-do list for Carolina, you know?
I mean, who would have thought Peter Mrazek coming back would be like a godsend, right? I mean, he's been so poor, and like, let alone like they're hoping and praying he comes back.
Yeah.
So, with that said, Pete, I know we got a couple questions on this Alex Nedeljkovic goalie for the Canes, who's had a pretty couple tough outings here.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on him with a decent home schedule this week coming up?
Yeah, I know they have a couple of favorable, winnable games. I mean, it's kind of like, I wouldn't put him into the top 200 overall just yet. I think if any goalie is going to move into that conversation, maybe it'll be like a Stalock or even, I don't know, a Pekka-Rinne. Like, I would rather have those guys, even though Nashville is in a split right now and they're not playing particularly well, I would still lean toward those more proven guys on proven teams. I don't know if Carolina is going to make the playoffs. I really don't. And like you said, like, they're waiting for Mrazek to come back, but they're probably not going to get Dougie Hamilton back. And without Dougie Hamilton, I can't say with confidence that that team's going to make it into mid-April.
I agree wholeheartedly there. Now, this is just the problem with the goalie position this year. You and I do the top 25 goalies on NHL.com every week, and we struggle to get guys in even at the end of the top 25. Okay, so when you do the math, like, that's not even a goalie per team that you can pick up. Like, you're looking at a very small pool of players that are going to make a difference in fantasy. So the fact that we're splitting hairs here about Nedeljkovic, about Stalock, I think that says everything you need to know about this position in fantasy right now.
And look at what we were doing on Friday, right? Georgiev won Thursday night against the Canadiens. We were pumping his tires. Lundqvist doesn't play anymore. Then he had a stinker on Friday. The Flyers ended up owning the weekend, which I think we were both pretty shocked that they won both of those games against the Rangers, and they beat Lundqvist on Sunday. But on Friday, like, we were looking at Georgiev, and we were looking at, like, the guys from, like, 16, 17, 18 through 25. Meanwhile, Thursday night, Georgiev wasn't even in the top 25 in general, and we were looking at all those guys like, we'd rather have Georgiev than all these guys. Mm-hmm. Pretty much up until, I think, Francouz is where we drew the line. And then look 2-3 days later, and it's thrown right back in our face, right?
Well, with the Chris Kreider injury, he got injured 2 minutes into the game against the Flyers, basically. Well, in the first period. I mean, it happened quickly.
Right.
And after he got injured, you could just tell, like, they had no secondary juice on that team. So that's what I worry a little bit now with Georgiev. I still think he's a good pickup if he's available. I think the Rangers are still going to put up a fight. And Pete, we've seen this how many times this year where the Rangers will rattle off, you know, 3 or 4 great games, and then they'll lay 3 or 4 eggs. So don't be completely off-put by that. Like, I'd be more concerned about Demko right now than Georgiev. I still think Georgiev's got a lot of appeal. Even when Chesty comes back, they will ride him, but Gorgiev's going to get probably some favorable matchups too, which could be, you know, if you get 1 a week, 2 a week from Georgiev, like, that's going to be pretty good for the playoffs.
It's good to see Shesterkin has been out on the ice practicing a little bit. I know he's been taking some shots over the weekend. Not so much shots up high, but at least it's some progress. David Quinn was talking about how Shesterkin has come a very long way in the 1 week that has separated that accident from where we are today. I mean, right, it's Monday morning. That news from the accident happened on the trade deadline day.
Yeah.
So the fact that he could come back soon, whether you own him as a standalone like we do in our main joint league, or you're kind of like looking at the tandem situation, that's a breath of fresh air to the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And I do believe, like, I would favor the Rangers right now over Florida. I would favor the Rangers over Columbus. I would favor the Rangers over Carolina right now.
What about the Islanders?
I mean, that was one of the worst games I've watched all season. The game against Boston.
Uh-huh.
Of any team.
Yeah.
It was like the first goal went in and it was kind of,
I mean, their power play's horrible.
Fluky-ish thing with a collision that, you know, it maybe shouldn't have counted, but it did. And it was like a backbreaker. The Islanders hadn't beaten Boston since 2013 at home, I saw. And it was like, I don't know. It's almost like when they have some resiliency, but I don't know. Something's missing still from that team. I still favor the Rangers over the Islanders. They don't play anymore against each other, but the Rangers could make up that ground even without Kreider,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, even without Kreider, they have a lot higher upside in fantasy. Like, I'd be way more tempted to pick up like a Buchnevich than anybody on the Islanders right now. They just don't have a power play, so.
And he came back, so now, like, for Buchnevich, you're looking at line with Zibanejad in Kreider's absence, so the emphasis is going to switch towards his wing to keep the ball moving, and then he's going to be on the first power play as well. I know Buchnevich, when he was day-to-day, was the first forward out of our top 100 forward rankings. I'm probably going to get him in this week because of the Kreider injury, right?
Now he's the first forward in. I mean, if you're playing on that top power play, I don't care if they're losing games, you're going to get fantasy points from those power play points. So that's a no-brainer. Now, swinging ahead here, we have Omz on Twitter, O-M-M-Z-Z-Z. He asks, my playoffs start next week. Okay. Who are some of the best low-owned players to target off the waiver wire based on schedule and games remaining? I have a couple listed here, Pete, but I just wanted to kick it off with a defenseman. It's actually Duncan Keith for the Blackhawks. They do not have a lot of wins left in the tank this season, but great schedule remaining. He's putting up points now, playing the first power play, logging about 27, 28 minutes per game. Vintage Keith there. So if you need a rare position, low ownership player, good schedule, I like to start it with Duncan Keith.
I like that one. Four games this week for Duncan Keith at the defenseman position. Sign me up. I think he's out there in one or two of my leagues. I got to get on that after Robbie just made the case for him right there. Other waiver wire pickups that I think are making some noise besides Keith, besides Andre Palat, who we said, Emil Bemström from the Columbus Blue Jackets was out there on the first power play, scored the go-ahead goal on Sunday. You look at everybody they're without right now. Atkinson, Seth Jones, Bjorkstrand, Elvis. I mean, it hasn't been a problem. It wasn't a problem in that game because they had an epic comeback. And Bemström is a guy, four goals in his past five games. So that's got someone I would take a little bit more seriously this Monday.
I like that because that's a kind of a high upside guy and a team that, you know, is hanging around there. They're playing tight games. Even if they're losing, it's usually by just a goal. So I like the Bemström ad a lot. I think that's where, you know, you get into those deeper leagues. You see that name, you might not really recognize. It doesn't jump out at you, but you're going to get value. If you add that player now and ride it out, I mean, Bjorkstrand's out the rest of the regular season. So you're going to get those goals. You're going to get those looks, especially from a young player with upside like Bemström.
Another guy who's been piling up goals lately is the guy that Bobby likes, Denis Gurianov. But I'll give you two other names that are kind of in that relatively unknown category. There's Danton Heinen, who I know you think is a good fit with Anaheim. Mm-hmm. And then there's Andrew Mangiapane. I mean, those are guys virtually unknown to the casual fan. Who do you like more for the rest of the season, Mangiapane from Calgary or Danton Heinen from the Ducks?
I would take a shot with Heinen. It just he to me seems like a safer player. Okay. Looks like they stuck him with Adam Henrique, who's been great for fantasy the past three or four weeks now, Pete. So I like the Heinen ad. I just feel a little bit safer about them. We see Calgary this year, however many times they've been shuffling the blender out there. It's hard for me to say, like, I know Mangiapane's got that Backlund and Tkachuk exposure, which is valuable, but I think when you look at the two players just side by side, Heinen versus Mangiapane, Heinen's the better player.
Yeah, Heinen showed some flashes in Boston for whatever reason, could never seem to take that next step fantasy-wise, but it's kind of like, I don't know, similar in some ways to like when Galchenyuk went to the Wild. It's just get him out of that spotlight, get him on a team where he can develop some chemistry with some unselfish players like Adam Henrique. Even though he scores a lot of goals, I would categorize as an unselfish player, a team first player that can make the players around him a lot better.
Now I would look at Davey's team here in the Devils. I know he went to followed them around Cali a little bit. They had a couple of good games, Pete, and Nikita Gusev is having a real strong end of season here. That's a player I'd look at too and just say, you know, forget the plus minus, but this guy's going to rack up the points. He's on pace for 50 points now, very quietly. He's got a couple of multi-point games in his last few, so I'd look at Goose as a guy that, hey, this could be the difference maker for your fantasy window here the next 3 or 4 weeks.
I mean, circle back from when we were talking about this guy in the preseason and then first 2 months of the season with John Hines, he was in the doghouse. He was playing on the third or fourth line. Now he's playing in the top six. Now he's piling up the points. I mean, this is now going on for 2 months where Gusev has been providing hidden value. So, yeah, I'm with you on that, man. I don't have him in any leagues, but if I'm in a deep league, and remember, put the contending team thing aside after a certain point, and Gusev has a chance to set the tone for the rest of his NHL career with how the second half is unfolding for him.
We're recording this on a Monday. Right now, he's on a six-game point streak, Pete, with nine points. He's actually a plus four, so forget what I said about plus-minus there. He's got six power play points. 6 nice. Power play points out of 9 points total. He's averaging over 15 minutes a game. So there you go, right there. You know, it's not going to jump off the paper at you. You know, someone might give you crap for picking up a player like that at this time of year, but I'm telling you, those are the players that are going to quietly win the championship. It's like Fiala, you know, a month and a half ago. It's like, you know, where's this coming from? And then all of a sudden he just erupts. He stays consistent. The points are racking up. And yeah. If you look at his season in total, he's going to have a great season because of this 2-month finish here.
I mean, if you have Fiala, you're on your way to a fantasy championship right now. And Gusev could be another one when you're standing there at the end of the day on the first place. Right, the first place block with the trophy in your hands. I mean, it doesn't matter who got you there. Gusev might be a guy that you push through with him, and you leave everybody else kind of shaking their head along the way.
Now, what about, we talked a little bit about Mikael Granlund last week, Pete. That's another guy that's been out there. I saw he played 20 minutes in his most recent game. That's ridiculous for a forward, especially of his caliber. So he obviously went the other way in the Fiala deal. It looks like Minnesota's kind of quietly kind of winning that trade. But are you seeing appeal here? Final stretch for Mikael Granlund, left wing, right wing.
Yeah, I think he's worth adding in deeper leagues. I wouldn't go so far as standard leagues. It's like it always, you know, his multi-goal game or multi-point game is always followed by one or two goose eggs. It's just the way that his Nashville career has gone so far. So I don't have full confidence in Granlund or Nashville for that matter. I mean, the way the West is going, Minnesota might get in over them. You really never know. So maybe that's a little crazy to say and think about, but it's the reality. I mean, Nashville plays well at home but doesn't always win. So, and then on the road, they're a completely different teams lately. So, yeah, I think Granlund I'd take a pass on in a standard league. That's just me.
Okay, and what about there's two center-only guys, Philip Deneau and Paul Stastny. Stastny's hovering right around 20% ownership like he has all season. Deneau was dropped frequently when he missed some games. Now he's back. He's starting to produce again. Is there any value in adding a center only? Like, even if it is a safe player like Stastny, is there still value there?
Yeah, I think so. And I would always look at a great way to break the tie other than strength of schedule is to look at Rob's team power rankings and where the team security matches up to another team. If you look at it this past week, I know Mark Stone's banged up. He's week to week. Still, Vegas number 2 on the list, right behind what Tampa, right ahead of Boston. So you're talking about the elite of the elite, the cream of the crop. So I would lean toward Vegas every single time. And Paul Stastny is playing not with Pacioretty, he's playing with Riley Smith and Marchessault, and
pretty good,
doing a fine job there.
I like that position, that line of placement a lot for him. And it's, I mean, this is, let's be honest, this is a good problem for the Knights to have, to be able to plug and play these guys with anybody. I mean, now William Carlson, while Bill's playing with Patches, I mean, that's an awesome little duo there too, which doesn't hurt Patches' value at all. So this Stone injury, if it's long-term, it's not good for their success in general hockey, but fantasy-wise, even now with even like Alec Martinez on the back and producing with them, like this is not, you're not going to struggle if you own a lot of these Golden Knights.
So, yeah, Vegas will not win the Stanley Cup without Mark Stone. I mean, that doesn't even really need to be said. But in terms of plugging the gap, they have Chandler Stephenson, who's played really well when he's gotten time with Pacioretty this year. And now, after all, he's back with Pacioretty on the right wing, I saw. So it's Pacioretty, William Carlson, and Chandler Stephenson in the spot of Mark Stone. So you could even look at Stephenson in a super deep league, tri-eligible, playing with you know, the top of the line guys on Vegas.
Now, if you are looking at that cup prediction, Pete, for them, I mean, certainly keep an eye on the Stone injury. Keep your eyes glued to that.
Yeah.
I agree with you. They're not going to win the cup without Stone. The reason you can see this, I mean, just look at their first power play without him. Stastny's on it, which is great for fantasy. But then you look below that, you look at their other forwards, and you're thinking, holy moly. I mean, you know, their third and fourth line just isn't going to make a difference in a playoff series. So, you know, I would probably be looking to hedge that bet if you made it. But fantasy-wise, Stastny, center only, but solid pickup.
And the way that Shea Theodore burned me in this one league yesterday, my playoff hopes are on life support. I actually ended up tying my matchup last week because Shea Theodore scored a goal on Sunday. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on Theodore just moving forward into the playoffs? Just some general talk, because Vegas is one of those teams, as good as they are, they don't have a guy that can like be a true number one defenseman and play like 30 plus minutes and produce offensively. But Theodore is maybe the one guy that still could take that next step forward.
He is. I mean, he's got 4 points in his past five games. He's averaging quite a few number of shots, at least three per game over that span. So he's checking a lot of boxes, Pete, and he's scoring goals now too, which is almost kind of uncharacteristic of him. But the past 2 years, I mean, he's in double digits. So it's been a nice like kind of, you know, when we first saw him enter the league, he looked a lot different than he does now, which is a compliment. Like, he's turning into this kind of goal-scoring threat defenseman that's really getting comfortable on that top power play. We know we were critical of him for the past 2 or 3 years, that he just wasn't taking that role and owning it. Mm-hmm. Even though there was no competition, it was almost like a problem. Now that Martinez is in there, now that Schmidt's playing better offensively, I think it's good, healthy competition for Theodore. But yeah, general talk, Pete, I still do worry about that. Like, all the cup contenders, they always have that big-time number one guy. You know, whether it's Chris Letang, whether it's John Carlson, whether Doughty, it's Petrangelo, yeah. Doughty. I mean, they always have that. So, you know, is that going to hurt them in the Stanley Cup final if they make it there? Absolutely.
Yep, I agree for sure. So looking again at the schedule breakdown for this week, if your fantasy playoffs are kicking off, teams with four games, Anaheim, Chicago, Colorado, Edmonton, Minnesota, Nashville, Pittsburgh, Sharks, and Tampa Bay.
Wow.
Who do you think is going to fill in if Burakovsky is out a few more games? I mean, Rantanen is on IR, so he's not coming back anytime soon, it looks like. The guys who have been there lately, I saw Nichushkin. Mm-hmm. There's also Namestnikov. Any interest?
Well, Namestnikov is still not playing more than 13 minutes a game, yeah. Even when they're banged up. So that to me, there's really no appeal. If he was playing like 16, 17 minutes, sure, I'd be running over there to pick him up, because that's probably going to be like Donskoy production or Berkey production when he was, you know, playing those kind of minutes. But I'm not really interested like in those secondary names. Nichushkin, great success, kind of bounce back story, but that's not really bounce back in fantasy. That's bounce back to like the 30-point range, you know, for that type of player. So, Pete, if I had to be honest, like I'm going to look at other teams. Like, if you don't have MacKinnon, if you don't have Gabe, and if you don't have Cale Makar, like I'm just not really loving that situation in fantasy.
One thing is an underrated strategy that I know some people take more seriously than others is look at who your opponent's playing.
True.
If your opponent in this crucial playoff matchup is if they have Landeskog or MacKinnon, try to get the other guy. Try to take a stab at Nichushkin or something to potentially offset some of the production. Because if they get the points, there's a good chance Nichushkin might get a few of them or
no
Namestnikov.
Doubt.
It's a little risky, but it could pay off.
No doubt. I actually think that's a funny strategy in a way, because it's kind of like a shark move.
Yeah.
but you can throw Francois into that mix too. He's been great, Pete. So like general hockey wise the Avalanche team, I'm very impressed that they keep responding to these critical injuries over and over again. They find ways to win, so you can't say enough good things there. But fantasy value wise yeah, like you're not going to get a lot from the Nichushkins or the Namestnikovs.
If the Avalanche get healthy at the right time, we know they have a tough road. They're probably playing Dallas in the first round, they're probably playing St. Louis in the second round. Do you have any interest in investing in their Stanley Cup chances, assuming they get healthy at the right time?
I still think they're a couple pieces away. I mean, luckily for them, Tyson Joe stepped up big time over their past three or four games. That's mm-hmm. a player that was non-existent until recently.
Yeah.
But I don't think when you come down to the playoffs and you have hard matchups, I don't think those guys are going to put you over the edge. If they matched up in round one against Dallas, I'd be all in on Dallas in six or seven for sure. I mean, Dallas, I think, as much as they've been quiet this year, it's a good thing for them. Like they don't need to blow through the regular season. If they get hot at the right time, Seguin starts scoring a little bit more, which he has been, like that's a much more of a total threat team to me than Colorado.
Yeah, Dallas has been playing playoff hockey all season long, and the teams that are going to run into them in the first round, second round, might have a rude awakening, right? Because not all the teams out there are playing that solidified playoff style like Dallas does every single night. And if Dallas scores three goals on you in the playoffs, 95% chance they win the game.
That's it, because they've been playing that way all season long. They've been playing these low-scoring, tight games.
Mm-hmm.
But and I know it's frustrated you and I, because I know you had Seguin in a league,
And, yeah, it killed me. And it killed me.
And I was like a hints guy. I wanted to get these kind of sleepers, thinking that the Dallas secondary scoring was going to erupt this year. It didn't happen. Of course, no surprises there. But I think that's a good problem when it comes to playoff hockey. Like, you know how to win these tight games. You can win low-scoring games. Whereas Colorado, I think they hit their real stride a couple times in the season, putting up 4 or 5 goals a game. But with these injuries, it's just not going to be able to be long-term success.
Yeah, and they kind of put up their best stretches kind of in this low pressure, under the radar stretches. I mean, these are not high stakes. I mean, to me, the high stakes games for them were like when they played the Washington Capitals right before the Stadium Series, and then the Stadium Series, and they came out flat in both of those games. They didn't get a point in either. So I still do worry about the big games for the Avalanche against those elite championship caliber teams. But back to the fantasy playoffs. At what point do you look at games remaining and throw it out the window and just take the better player? Because we got a couple of good fan questions. One, to me, people were looking at Chicago, who's out of the playoff picture, and this guy is thinking about starting Kubalik and DeBrincat over Barkov and Huberdeau because Chicago has 4 games this week and Florida only has 2. To me, I wouldn't overthink that one. You got to play your elite players, right?
Now, if you're debating like a Danton Heinen versus a Gurianov, like I'll look at games played. But when you have 2 superstars, I don't care if you're only playing 2 games, I'm always rostering those guys because if one game of production from those high-level players might be worth more than 4 games of a Kubalik or whoever else you mentioned. Like that's where I draw the line. Now, if we're splitting hairs here, look at the waiver wire guys, always by schedule, but the superstars, you always have to start them. I don't care how bad Florida's look lately. Like, you cannot sit those guys.
Yeah, I mean, if in the off chance that even one out of the 2 games this week that they both erupt for 3 or 4 points, and then the fact that you built your roster around these 2 players,
right?
If you have Barkov and Huberdeau, chances are they were your 2 of your first 4 or 5 picks in your draft. So think back to the beginning of the season. Trust your instincts from back then and don't overthink these things. Yeah, it's a good tiebreaker, but play your best players when it matters. Even if, say, Ben Bishop has a tough matchup in your playoff week, don't bench him. I mean, he got you to this point.
Now, is that going to be consistent logic through the end of the season, or is this posturing for round 1 or 2 of playoffs? Like, where do you, like, because I know if you do make the championship week, that final week or 2 weeks of games, depending on your league settings, like, that's when I would maybe, Pete, like, play the 4 games. I know Davey did it 2 years ago. I think he picked up, like, Colton Skivor from the Panthers when he was there because he had, like, 4 games in the championship week because they had, like, a makeup game or something. So maybe in that situation, if you're really trying to win 1 week and you're down to the wire, you have a couple injuries, maybe I'd consider it, but otherwise, I think that the long-term strategy really is to just always play the superstars.
I think the deeper you get, you feel like a lot of the time it's house money and you can afford to lean toward like a guy that's just getting hot towards the end of the season over a proven guy. But yeah, I think beginning of the playoffs, this is like where you take the big picture into account, and then you cross that bridge when you get there a little later.
And truthfully, I mean, at the end of the day, like your roster has to be already set up pretty well. I mean, for you to advance in the fantasy playoffs, like you're not going to win round 1 with 5 or 6 waiver wire guys like Heinen chugging along, right? It'd be great to see that, but you should be at this point. You should feel pretty good about your roster with maybe like 1 or 2 tweaks, just depending on injuries. Over the final couple weeks here.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, the timing of the games is really important. Like, even if a team only has 3 games this week, but they might play a weekend back-to-back, like, those are the games you need.
Yeah.
Last night, I was scoreboard watching in one of my leagues, and it was all because I had a guy going, Kopitar, who's been amazing for my team through all the bad times for LA this year. He was going in the 10:30 Eastern game against Vegas, and my opponent had Shea Theodore.
Wow.
He had Shea Theodore score a goal. I had Kopitar score 2, but that's the fun of it. And then I jotted down for all the listeners here the teams with back-to-backs this weekend. Uh-huh. Carolina, Columbus, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, San Jose, and Tampa Bay. So, like, if you have a Fiala, a Stalock, those guys are going to play this weekend. big games, Columbus, Bemstrom, you know, some of these other fill-ins from that roster, yeah. Pierre-Luc Dubois. These are guys that are going to be playing two games this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, back-to-backs. I love that strategy.
That's a good one, Pete, because you're right. I mean, that can make up all the difference for you right there. Even if you had a slow Monday through Friday, but then you get that Saturday, Sunday push, that could do it.
And Trocheck, too. We've talked a lot about Trocheck here. The period in between, if your league counts hits, if it counts block shots, and then maybe he drops a multi-point game over the weekend, mm-hmm. Carolina, also a team with, you know, among the most games remaining, including a back-to-back this weekend.
It's true. And I'm looking at our waiver wire list here again, Pete, just to throw out some more names. Uh-huh. But, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's drying up a little bit at every position. Forward-wise, has been absolutely the most deep this year. We've got a guy like Joel Kellman on the list from San Jose, who's on a three-game point streak. It's interesting to see him playing around 15 minutes per game. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're in a real deep league, like, these are the type of players you're looking at. But, you know, where I have to come in and caution everybody is you cannot part ways with a good, you know, top 100 season-to-date player just because he's cold lately. Like, you cannot be moving that type of player for one of these, like, waiver wire cuff guys.
Yeah, I agree with that. Don't go too crazy picking up a no-name just because he has four straight games with a point or something like that. Go with the trusted guys, guys we've been talking about all season, like Gurionov. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even Bemstrom, we've mentioned a number of times. Robert Thomas is a big one. I saw Robert Thomas has new line mates. He's playing second line center with Zach Sanford and David Perron, and then they're stacking their first line these days, Jaden Schwartz, Ryan O'Reilly, and Braden Schenn. So Robert Thomas, clearly, like, the Blues are working around him. He's a mm-hmm. big part of their present, and I'm curious to see if he sticks in the top six, even into the playoffs when Tarasenko comes back. That could happen. Yeah.
No, that could be a major one. And Thomas, like, they like to play him a lot, too. The only thing with Gurionov is he's playing, like, 11 minutes a game,
uh-huh.
and he has 20
still
goals.
Scoring.
He has 20 goals in 60 games.
And that probably leads them.
Right. It might be right up there. So I'm just, like, not that I'm questioning the coach's decision or anything, but I'm just kind of struggling to see how, especially a team like Dallas that needs more scoring, you don't give the guy a little bit higher ice time. I know that's from a fantasy lens because I want to see him produce even more, but that's like where it's like, okay, is Robert Thomas a more valuable player because he's playing more?
Yeah, I think Robert Thomas is more valuable than Gurionov for the rest of the season to break that tie.
Uh-huh.
Couple other fan questions before we wrap this thing up. This was an interesting one from Matt on Twitter. Eberle or Zucker? I know the Islanders' top line was playing a little bit better, what, Lee, Barzal, and Eberle.
Mm.
Eberle's shown a pulse lately, but I would still lean towards Zucker even during the Penguins' tailspin. What do you think?
I think so, too, just with the caveat that, you know, Hornquist is the player that you wanted to get in on. Rusty is the guy that you wanted to get in earlier in the season. Like, mm-hmm. those are the guys I feel strong about. Zucker, I know he had two goals against Anaheim, but he's been a minus, I think, like 7 or 8 since he's got to Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
And that, to me, like, I know it's a bad stat, sure, but sometimes that means that the line's not really working out too well. So I'm a little worried that Sully, especially after the losing streak, might tweak something there. It might be a little shot at GMJR if that does happen, but they have butt heads before, so, you know, look for Zucker maybe to bump down to the third line if this losing streak continues.
And like with many other players before Zucker, you assume it could be a good fit, but it's hard to play with Sidney Crosby. No knock on him. It's just the way he plays. Like, some guys are a great fit, some guys are not. I mean, Connor Sheary was playing back up there instantaneously after they got him back. And as much as, like, Zucker is a bigger name, mm-hmm. former 30-goal scorer, like, Sheary might be the guy that sticks there for the rest of the season, for better or worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, approach Sheary on the waiver wire with your with caution, uh-huh. but with knowledge that he has the staying power on that line, I think.
And Eberle, you know, he has had a couple good games, and he's playing high ice time. Like, I know the Islanders aren't heavy scoring-wise, but I feel safer about Ebs. I really do. Uh-huh. Like, if Trotz likes this player, and whatever player Trotz likes, he's going to play north of 16 minutes. So I would sign up for Eberle just to be guaranteed a good plus minus and a couple points over the remaining couple of games. I really would. If Eberle was available in my league, I'd strongly considering making that switch, honestly, between Zucker and him.
And Eberle last year in March really reignited when he was back on the line with Barzal, and then in the playoffs was a real big difference maker with his power play points, with an even strength role. with New York, who's always starved for offense. But Eberle, like when their offense gets going, when Eberle gets going, I feel like
that we've seen that before for sure, Pete. And I know the Islanders are you know clawing onto the playoff spot they hold, but there's no one else behind them breathing down their neck. So no matter how bad they've been playing for the past 2 months now, it doesn't really matter. Like they're probably going to make it based on that alone. If there were teams behind them that were healthy, playing really well, I'd be worried. But there's really not. Florida sold at the deadline. The Rangers are too banged up now. Carolina is a pretty average team without Dougie Hamilton and some of the other guys. So I think the Islanders are safe.
Even Columbus is like just totally, you don't know what to expect any given night. You loved what you saw from them on Sunday, but you didn't like what you saw from them the previous game. The Islanders are a little bit more consistently competitive, right? Even the games they've been losing lately have been, I mean, other than the Boston game, they went to overtime with the Rangers, overtime with the Blues.
Yep.
They're so competitive, and they have Trotz to thank for that. So, yeah, that's just something to keep in mind there. And then looking at some of these other things, I mean, like, would you cut the cord? Like, this one guy's asking, should I play Fiala over Olofsson this week?
Yes.
At a certain point, like, one team is really down in the dumps, and the guy's injured, so you have to use that as a simple tiebreaker, right, Olofsson?
Absolute no-brainer for me. I mean, Fiala's multi-points every single night. No matter who the opponent is, great opponent, bad opponent, he's scoring every game pretty much. That's, to me, now a no-brainer, especially with Olofsson being a little injury, kind of murky situation here.
All right. So we're going to have our new rankings coming out on NHL.com/fantasy. We'll have on Tuesday my forward rankings, Robbie's defenseman rankings on Wednesday, and then the goalie rankings, which we all work on. We'll have Davey Boy, goalie master, back in the office from L.A. And check out those rankings and hit us up on Twitter. We'll have another show for you. What, later in the week?
I think we're looking at Friday potentially. So if we don't get to another show before then, you know, feel free to hit us up with any questions. We'll help break those ties for you. And hey, good luck. I mean, this is crunch time. So you got to wake up and get these players now. And even, I'll just say this to end it here, Pete. Even if the player you picked up, you know, goes a game or two games without a point or a win if they're a goalie, I still think you got to hold on because the waiver wire right now is just too thin. You cannot risk dropping a player that will end up making the difference for you, even if they get off to a slow start on your fantasy team.
And don't be too, like, trigger happy earlier in the week and not looking at the games played and stuff. Because the worst thing is, like, when you pick somebody up and then realize that they're not playing at all this weekend, or, you know, make the add now with guys that are playing this weekend and have three or four games this week, and you won't be disappointed. And just, you know, this way you leave your last ad, your precious last ads for an injury replacement. If one of your best players gets injured on Thursday or Friday, then you have some flexibility. If you spend your three or four waiver wire ads now, then you're going to be out of luck if somebody gets injured.
Oh, and check out the start feature on Yahoo. If you do the start for the week, it's like a nice way for people like us who are in too many leagues, Pete, to like set your lineup, but also make sure you have the correct goalie starting, because there are some wonky ones. Also, make sure you have a guy like Nathan MacKinnon playing over Bo Horvat, stuff like that. Just make sure, cherry pick it ahead of time, make sure your schedules are good to go in case you forget one day too.
And also check back if you do that auto set and then you make a move, sometimes it doesn't it like kind of resets. Use the auto setting thing, but then check your roster after you do that, especially if you're wheeling and dealing on the waiver wire this week.
No doubt. And that'll do it for us, but leave us a review, 5 stars on Apple, whatever platform you give it. And we appreciate the few that have come in last week. We've heard a couple people have made the difference this year for our fantasy advice. So we appreciate that.
It's great to hear when people say they're in the top half of their leagues or in first place entering the playoffs. That's what we hope to do. And we'll continue you on the path to your fantasy championship. So for Rob Reese at NHL Reese on Twitter and Instagram, myself, NHL Jensen, on the same two platforms, hit us up. Don't hesitate. We'll help you win your league. And we'll talk to you again later in the week. Thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.